Hello, America. This is the place for uncensored talk on everything that divides us as a nation. I'm Alan Jacoby, and welcome to The Great Divide. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Great Divide. Hope you're all doing well. Listen, to support the show, best thing you could do is go to the website, thegreatdivide1776.com. All the social media is there, the YouTube channel. Like, subscribe, share. Share it with like-minded patriots like yourself so the algorithms are forced to put the show out there, because with the shadow banning and all that, they like to hide it because, you know, they don't like the way conservatives look at things. They don't like our way of thinking. So yeah, thegreatdivide1776.com. You get all the episodes. You get all the social medias there. Just like what you can, subscribe, share it, and it would greatly help spreading the show to other people. So I want to talk about former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who I'm sure you've heard by now. It happened a little over a week ago. Rudy Giuliani was served with a search warrant at his New York City apartment by the Department of Justice. Seven FBI agents knocked on Rudy Giuliani's apartment door, 6 a.m., with a search warrant issued by the Justice Department to collect his electronic devices. So I want to take a minute and talk about Rudy Giuliani for a minute as a man, a politician, lawmaker. Rudy Giuliani in the 1980s was a U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York who led the federal war and prosecution on organized crime in New York City, and he dealt major blows to the Italian mafia. Major blows. Almost put them out of business. He's very tough on crime. And it didn't end there, because in 1993, he became mayor of New York City and vowed to be tough on crime, which he was. He cleaned up New York City. When he became mayor, he saw that Times Square back in the early 90s, which is one of the world's biggest tourist hotspots in the world, especially in New York City. If you've ever been there, you know. It was riddled with porn stores and porn theaters and peep shows and everything that goes along with that. And it brought a certain element to the area that made crime increase and run rampant through that area of New York City. So what did Rudy do? In 1995, he had the zoning laws changed in that area of the city in Times Square, and he made it so that you couldn't have a porn theater or a porn shop or any type of adult shops within 500 feet of a school, a church, any type of house of worship. And there were other restrictions that went along with it to really deter any adult stores or pornography theaters to open or stay in business. And then with the raise in rents, it really did damage to the porn industry in Times Square, which in essence, when they disappeared, the crime element disappeared and it cleaned up Times Square. It actually went from, I believe it was 175, 177 porn theaters back then to what now in like 2019, they were down to about 20, maybe give or take a few. So Rudy Giuliani did a good job cleaning up Times Square that he did. Now, if you look at Rudy Giuliani's career and his legacy as a crime fighter for the United States Justice Department, and then his time being tough on crime as mayor of New York City, who also had to deal with the devastation of September 11th, 2001, the World Trade Center attack, it doesn't seem like Rudy Giuliani is the type who approves of lawlessness and breaking laws, let alone breaking laws himself. You know, on the contrary, he spent his whole professional career upholding and defending the Constitution. But of course, now you'll hear people on the left say, well, that's not true. He was Donald Trump's attorney. You know, criminals, they flock together. He's a piece of shit and everything else. Everybody has their opinion. Rudy Giuliani's way of doing things in this, when he was mayor of New York City, he was very aggressive. He was a big supporter of law enforcement and policing the city. And that was controversial among some civic leaders in the city, and racial profiling and all that nonsense. And, you know, stop and frisk and you know, the The street crime of the New York City Police Department was out looking for illegal guns, which worked. But again, yeah, the Al Sharptons and Jesse Jacksons and all them were in an uproar with that because they were in bad neighborhoods profiling young African Americans. So they said they weren't profiling anybody. They saw somebody, they had intelligence that somebody had an illegal gun, or they saw what appeared to be possibly an illegal gun. And most of the time when they searched these people, guess what? They found an illegal gun. Now, Democrats want gun control, but they don't want to take the necessary steps to make that gun control happen in inner cities. They don't want to do that. So back to Rudy Giuliani and this nonsensical search warrant. So now the FBI executes a search warrant from the Justice Department, and this is the very federal law enforcement agency where Rudy Giuliani worked as a prosecutor, prosecuting crimes and criminals. And they say the search warrant that it was for an investigation into possible dealings that Rudy Giuliani had with foreign nationals while he was Trump's attorney, and if he represented these foreign nationals from Ukraine and other places. So I find this very interesting, and I'm wondering if there's more to it. Well, Rudy Giuliani, again, we know, was Donald Trump's personal lawyer. And the FBI, who I don't think can be trusted anymore ever since the Obama era and probably before. So now the FBI and the U.S. Justice Department are now under the Biden administration. So it makes you think, why now? Well, Rudy Giuliani had certain things that he wanted to give to the Department of Justice for quite some time, and the FBI didn't want it, like, Hunter Biden's laptop hard drives and things like that just got swept under the rug. So it makes you think, is this a play by Democrats, Joe Biden and his administration, by politicizing the DOJ, to further, in the hopes that they could smear and further their war on Donald Trump, maybe make it difficult for him just enough so he can't run for president again in 2024, or maybe just enough to have other popular Republicans who support Donald Trump back away from Trump so he loses control and the power he has in the GOP. Because let's face it, Donald Trump is the most influential figure in the Republican Party right now. He is big with the fundraising. We know he can raise funds for Republican candidates, and we know he has a lot of influence. When prominent candidates are asked if they're looking to run for president, they're giving the same answer. Well, we're waiting to see what Donald Trump is going to do. That tells you something. Donald Trump is the leader of the Republican Party, and he will be the leader of the Republican Party until he decides he doesn't want to be the leader of the Republican Party anymore. Is he going to run for president again? Don't know. There's a lot of rumors. He's hinting towards it. The odor in the air, smells more and more like there might be a Trump presidential run coming in 2024, maybe with a vice president, maybe governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis. Who knows? Nobody knows. We'll probably find out right after the midterm elections or around the midterm elections. We do know one thing, though, about the Democrats. We know that Democrats love to attack their political opponents because, well, that's the only way they can win, because their policies completely suck. They can't win on their policies. They only can win if they smear and try to destroy their political opponents. It's the only way Democrats win. It's the only way they know how to campaign. And it seems as though now the DOJ and the FBI have been politicized yet again by the Biden administration, just like they were under the Obama administration, with the Russia collusion and the Adam Schiff nonsense and the dossier and Hillary Clinton and all that nonsense, BS, the FISA warrants and the illegal wiretapping of the Trump campaign and spying on the Trump campaign, which was all shown. It was all nonsense. There was no wrongdoing, and there was a lot of shady shit on part of the Department of Justice. But again, all swept under the rug. Is this legal thuggery? Is it a type of legal thuggery, being that the Biden administration has control of the DOJ and whoever Joe Biden's handlers are, and whether it's Kamala Harris, Susan Rice, whatever other clowns are moping around the White House that are truly in charge? Is this their way of, we have to do something about the Republican Party? We have the political clock is ticking to the midterm elections in 2022, which means we have to do as much damage to the Republican Party as possible so we can hopefully keep our power, stay in power, restore some power. And it's out of desperation, I think. I think it's a great chance that this is a type of legal thuggery and intimidation. But what's also interesting about this whole search warrant ordeal, and it's like a kick in the ass, is when they were taking all of Rudy Giuliani's electronic devices, he asked them specifically if they wanted some hard drives that he had. And when the FBI agents asked Rudy Giuliani about them, Rudy Giuliani said, well, these are copies of hard drives from Hunter Biden's laptop. Now, Rudy Giuliani explained this in a bunch of different interviews in a bunch of different media outlets and specifically said, he said, first, the FBI agents were very professional in their demeanor. They were very, you know, cordial and courteous. Their demeanor changed a little bit when they were told what these hard drives were. Excuse me. When they were told by Rudy Giuliani, the subject of the search warrant, told by Rudy saying that these are Hunter Biden's hard drives, the FBI said, no, we don't want them. So search warrants are interesting, and I'm not an attorney, but search warrants can be very specific and can be very broad. And from what I'm hearing and understanding and reading is that this search warrant for Rudy Giuliani's apartment was for all electronics. So hard drives are electronics. So why didn't they take those hard drives? Why did they pick and choose and only take certain things? They took phones, computers, Blackberries, all that stuff. And what else is interesting is that the FBI, they took Rudy Giuliani's word, at his word, that they were in fact Hunter Biden's hard drives from his laptop, copies of it. So typically when a search warrant is being executed by law enforcement, they're not going to take the word of the subject of the investigation and the subject of who's being searched. So that's interesting. Granted, maybe there was some professional courtesy being that they, you know, Rudy Giuliani is a prominent figure, politician, former mayor of one of the largest cities in America, and a former member of the U.S. Justice Department as a prosecuting U.S. attorney. So, but they took his word, and they could have been anyone's hard drive. They could have been Donald Trump's hard drive. They could have been Roger Stone's hard drive. They could be so much incriminating evidence against anyone on those hard drives, but they took Rudy Giuliani at his word. And the only thing I could think of is the reason they didn't take those hard drives is that, and I'm not an attorney, like I said, that if the FBI took those supposed, air quote, Hunter Biden laptop copies of the hard drives, and they went through them and they saw something incriminating, that the FBI would have to do something about it and act on it because they see something incriminating that leads them into a completely separate criminal investigation. We don't know. But we do know that the Biden administration couldn't have that. So whatever the case is with these Hunter Biden hard drives and laptops, obviously the FBI and the Justice Department wants no part of it because, well, you know, Joe Biden's the president of the United States. And, well, we really don't want all that good stuff to come out about Hunter, which is already out there but being ignored. We know that. But this, again, with the legal thuggery and the intimidation, we know that the Democratic Party and with their tactics are similar to dictators and morons who attempt to destroy their political opponents when they can't win or they're scared of again, losing that power that they have and they need. They want to gain more power. They want to hold on to it. So they will do anything they can to try in an attempt to destroy their political opponents, especially when they're scared. And the Democrats are scared because they know in their hearts that they're probably going to lose the House in 2022, maybe the Senate, maybe both, hopefully both. Oh, it's in, and now they're going to politicize the Department of Justice in order to do and the, make the attempts of this legal thuggery, hoping that if they go after Rudy Giuliani, something will come up that they can go after Donald Trump or tie them together and make people just concerned and aggravated and disappointed enough that they abandon the whole MAGA movement and we don't want anything to do with Donald Trump, which we know is not going to happen because we know that there's nothing there. And the whole politicizing of the Department of Justice, like Obama did it again with the whole Russia crap and Hillary Clinton and all that nonsense. One thing Donald Trump didn't do is he did not politicize the DOJ. And he could have, like any other president, he could have. He could have launched a witch hunt on Hillary Clinton. But when he became president, he chose not to politicize the DOJ and go after Hillary Clinton because he was smarter than that. And one, he's not scared of Hillary Clinton. He was never scared of Hillary Clinton. He never saw Hillary Clinton as a threat. Donald Trump always saw and still sees Hillary Clinton for what she is, as a loser. She's a political loser. That's what she is. And we all know Hillary Clinton is a criminal, and would love to see something come out to prove that, and people have the balls to pursue that and see all of the vile things that she has done in the world of politics, which we all know is there. But the Democrats got something that they wanted out of this so far, is that the publicity of this search warrant is exactly what they wanted, the Democrats, because they want the story to linger for as long as possible. Like, you know, CNN, propaganda. Like, you know, CNN got caught with the propaganda with Project Veritas and James O'Keefe, where the director said we have to keep these negative stories out. And it is propaganda to help the Democratic Party. So we know that. But smart, rational thinking people like myself and you will realize that this whole spectacle isn't totally about Rudy Giuliani. It's partially about him. But it's more about Donald Trump and the furthering the war against the Republican Party and Donald Trump, who's running it. But we do know that there are no charges. It's just an investigation, which means nothing. No arrests, nothing like that. No indictments. And Rudy Giuliani's presumed innocent and has the right to due process like you and I would. And that's the beauty of this country. And that until something comes about it, which I would bet that nothing comes about it. This is just a publicity stunt in the hopes to, again, smear their opponents. And that's sad because the Democrats suck and they can't win strictly on their policies. Okay, so Joe Biden gave his address to the joint session of Congress a little over a week ago. And I haven't really had a chance to talk much about it, but I watched it, and it was very weak and very bleak, and it was painful to watch. It looked like also it looked like it took place at the beginning of the pandemic, not over a year into the pandemic when there's three vaccines available, not to mention most, if not all members of Congress, the president and the vice president, are all vaccinated. You have a room that holds 1,600 people, and it had 200 people in it, all spread apart, wearing masks, some of them double masked. It was very bizarre. What is the message here? We're over a year into the pandemic, and the Biden administration is pushing everyone to get the shot in their arm and get vaccinated, and the vaccines, back to normal, vaccines, go get vaccinated. And our government and lawmakers in this big public televised event has 200 people in a room by invitation only. That was done by Nancy Pelosi. The date that it happened, when Congress was not in session, most of them were home in their home districts. So, and everyone was just spread apart. It was depressing. There was nothing electrifying about the event, which is usually a joint session with the president speaking is usually a pretty electrifying. The room is charged. Everybody's there. It's just something about it. And it just feels very American. And it didn't. It didn't. It felt very commie-like, like a communist nation, just very sick and weird, and no rhyme or reason. It was boring. And in the words of Senator Ted Cruz, it was like he made a comment. It's like Joe Biden's first 100 days in office, boring but radical. And it was radical with the stuff that was being said. And you had Ted Cruz and other members of Congress nodding off, and Democrats are clapping at every nonsensical sentence that Joe Biden read off the teleprompter. It's just, again, it's just bizarre. There was, and a lot of radical things were said. We're going to get into a couple of them. You know, the Biden administration, they're pushing everyone, encouraging everyone to go get vaccinated so we can get back to normal. That's what they keep saying. Then they have this ridiculous event. They have this ridiculous event with more empty seats than there were full seats. Again, this room holds 1,600 people. They had 200. If you see photos of it, you see Nancy Pelosi and Kamala Harris sitting behind Joe Biden in masks, nodding to each other like they approve of everything that's going on. You see people in masks. Some people are nodding off and sleeping on their phones. They don't care. Republicans aren't going to clap of all the radical nonsense that Joe Biden is reading off a teleprompter. And Democrats, no matter what he says, are going to get up and clap and further their agenda. They could sit there and say, we're going to go out tomorrow and sacrifice 100 babies. And every Democrat would get up and clap. Well, that would probably be true anyway. So this ridiculous, unelectrifying event, and now they're trying to encourage everyone to go get vaccinated. So here's my question. Why would I choose to go get vaccinated when I'm told it will get my life back to normal, but then I see our country's leaders acting as if nothing works? Meaning a year into the pandemic and three vaccines available and millions and millions and millions of shots going into arms of Americans. And then a lot of other people still skeptical and not wanting to get vaccinated. They want this message of you should go get vaccinated so we can get back to normal. And then they have this abnormal event where it looks like there's a disease running rampant right there on the floor of Congress. The message I'm getting is nothing works. Because if the message was getting vaccinated works, and all of those people in Congress that are vaccinated should have been there. It should have been a packed house. It does not make sense. Again, what would make sense is every member in that room, every member of Congress in that room, unmasked, showing the normalcy after being vaccinated that they say we can get back to. That, I know, would encourage people to get the shot. Get the shot, don't get the shot, I don't care, I'm not going to judge you. I'm not getting vaccinated. I've never gotten a flu shot in my life. I'm not interested in the vaccine. No one's going to force me to get the vaccine. Vaccine passports are stupid and unconstitutional, and they could shove them up their asses. Whoever wants to carry around a vaccine passport or an app on their phone and wear a mask until their dying day, more power to you. You're not going to hear a word out of me. I'm not getting vaccinated because somebody has to kill all the zombies anyway. That's my take on it. So back to this Joe Biden nonsensical event. And I'm not going to talk about everything Joe Biden said, but it was basically his pitch for his nonsensical spending package and, you know, the tax nonsense, free government-run education, because that's what we need. We need the government teaching our children and extending education and free education and indoctrinating our children with critical race theory and all that bullshit. No thanks, Joe. No thanks, federal government. Stay out of my life. This notion of big government and allowing it to have a major role in the lives of Americans is very concerning, people. You do not want the federal government in your life any more than it has to be for what it's needed for. It's concerning. Joe Biden, with the proposals, the new proposals, wants to spend $6 trillion in his first 100 days, his first year as presidency, $6 trillion. Our grandchildren will be paying this debt. He's got, you know, almost $2 trillion on this infrastructure plan that it's not infrastructure. The physical infrastructure is, I've said this before in a past episode, roadways, highways, sewage plants, utilities, bridges, tunnels, things like that. Physical infrastructure to transport people, goods, commerce from one place to another, right? It's not healthcare, childcare, low-income housing, or anything, or broadband internet for low-income people. None of that is physical infrastructure. I'll give the broadband internet that is infrastructure, communications, but not for what they're saying it's for. Okay? Humans are an infrastructure. Again, they just want to put their little things in packages and make it look good and tie it up in a package and hope that Republicans will vote for it. And then you have his damaging tax package that's already driving corporations to move their companies, their operations, manufacturing out of the country along with their money. Why wouldn't they? Especially with the tax increases that the Biden administration wants to impose on corporations and people making over $400,000. Your capital gains taxes is increasing, which is going to kill your 401ks. It's going, when you sell your house, if you inherited properties, it's going to almost double, and it's going to kill the hardworking American, middle class American, lower class American. It's going to kill us. And believe me when I say, the tax increases will affect everyone, not those just making $400,000 a year or more. When you hear Joe Biden saying that and Jen Psaki, it's all bullshit. You may not see it in tax increases directly in your finances, but you will see more of your money flying out of your pocket because of the increase in product cost. I'm not an economist. I'm not an economics major. I mean, it's pretty basic. You know, that grocery bill will go from $150 a week to $250 a week, and you won't have any additional groceries in your shopping cart. It's just higher product cost. You're going to tax me higher, and I am producing all of these products. Well, guess what? My product is going to increase in price because manufacturing is going to increase. I'm being taxed by the federal government harshly, and the consumer is going to feel it. And that's a fact. It's basic economics. And again, our grandkids, I feel they will be paying for this debt if it all goes through. And I pray and hope that there are moderate Democrats and non-Rhino Republicans that are going to stand up for all this frivolous, nonsensical, unnecessary spending that's going to destroy our economy. Again, I'm not an economics scholar, but I don't have to be to see that our currency will be weak and our biggest economic adversary, China, will dominate the world's economy. And I hope that's not the scenario that plays out. I really don't. Another thing with this speech with Joe Biden, he made a very, very, very alarming statement. It's very concerning. And if you don't think it's concerning, you should really take a step back and look at it. He said, "We the people are the government." And as soon as he said that, I said, what did this old man just say? Did the president of the United States just say that? Did he just say, we the people are not the government? No, Joe, you are not the people. You are the government. The people are not the government. We the people, by the people, for the people. Those people being the American voters. The government is there to serve the will of the people and uphold and defend the Constitution, which most of them don't anyway. They violate that oath every time they open their sewers mounted 2 inches below their nose and spew shit. They're not upholding the Constitution. Destroying election integrity is not upholding the Constitution. Trampling on the Second Amendment is not upholding the Constitution. Media censorship and trying to limit free speech is not upholding and defending the Constitution. And that's a big reason we need to protect the integrity of the election process. One of the biggest reasons. Big government sucks, people. That's a fact. Big government sucks. You do not want big government. You do not want Greece. You do not want Venezuela. You do not want those economies here. Capitalism is a good thing. Free market, free trade, prosperity. That's what this country is all about. And there was something, and remember, Ronald Reagan, he said, what was it, the nine scariest words you could ever hear in your life is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Well, I am from the government and I'm here to help. Nine words. You don't want to hear that. And you have heard it from the Biden-Harris administration. She said it. He said it. Help is here. I don't want your help. Your $1,400 stimulus checks are not doing anything for anybody. You want a stimulus check? Go get a job. Poof. Wallet stimulated. There are people out there hiring that cannot get help. I was at my local deli today, and the guy says he had a kid, came, needed a job, got an apartment. He came, he worked a full day, broke his ass, got paid. The next day, he was a no-show. They called him, and he says, oh, I wasn't feeling well. I guess I should have called you. Yeah, you should have called. He came back, he worked again, and then he no-showed again. Then he says, oh, I don't want to work weekends. Well, it's a deli. You have to work weekends. And then he just didn't show back up to work. Because if he could sit home and make more on unemployment, why would he come back to work? Landscapers can't find employees. Construction companies can't find employees. The restaurant industry can't find employees because everybody is sitting home sucking on the government teat and getting their unemployment. And they're happy about it because there's no work ethic among these young people to begin with. And now they can sit home in their knit hats playing Xbox in mommy's basement, stuffing their fat fucking faces with Hot Pockets, and get paid by the government to do it and not have to work. And it's disgusting. But that's the left. That's the left. They want the big government. And there was something else that Sleepy Joe said that stuck out as one of the most moronic statements of the night. This one was unbelievable. It was, now get this. This is Joe Biden, the president of the United States, the leader of the free world. He said that the events on January 6th, 2021, was the worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War. Yes. This guy is shot. He's off the reservation. Those words came out of his mouth. I almost fell off the chair. I could not fathom what he had just said. He's been a career politician for almost 50 years. I was swimming around in my father's balls while he was voting bills to get passed into law. Worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War? Who wrote that part of his speech? Who was the idiot leftist that put that in his speech so he could read it off the teleprompter? Because whatever it is, they should put them in front of the firing squad and not hesitate. Did Joe Biden sleep through American history or sleep through actual events? 4 presidential assassinations, 2 attempted presidential assassinations, the Senate building bombing, was it back in the 80s? Pearl Harbor, September 11th, 2001, the World Trade Center, the Pentagon. Is this guy shitting me? The worst attack on our democracy since the Civil War? Off the reservation. It's amazing. The stupidity. And I have to blame Joe Biden. He's the president of the United States for saying it. However, who was the idiot that wrote it? And Joe Biden didn't write it. It was one thing about Donald Trump and his press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, said it, and other people in his communications department. He would have his speeches written. And up until almost the time he hit the podium, he'd have a red Sharpie marker and he would make all these corrections on his index cards or his speeches. And they'd all be in a panic like, oh, here he goes. He's going off script. And he would always make the changes because he would proofread his speech. You're the president of the United States. Wouldn't you maybe just take a look at it? And when you see January 6th, 2021, a bunch of idiots going into the Capitol, which was tragic and bad, very bad. It should have never happened. But that's the worst attack on our democracy. And if you see that as the president, maybe you could turn around and say, yeah, we need to change this. There's a lot of things that were worse than that. You have other politicians that have said it, Chuck Schumer, other idiots. Pearl Harbor and 9/11 alone. Are these people out of their minds? It's just amazing, the stupidity. So after the big speech, thank God, the big speech ended. Everyone started waking up and rubbing the sand out of their eyes. You had Republican Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina. He gave the GOP's rebuttal to the Democratic president's address to the Joint Congress. And it was nicely put. And in my opinion, it was to the point. It really was. And for those who may not have watched or know who Tim Scott is, he's the only black Republican senator and the GOP. And that shouldn't matter. It shouldn't matter, right? It should not matter. But it does. It does matter because mainstream media and other politicians made it matter. Tim Scott said, America is not a racist country. Well, I agree with him. Because the country and the majority of the people in it are not racist. We know that. Does racism exist? Yes, of course, racism exists. But it's not what the country is about now. It's not based on white supremacy and all the bullshit that the mainstream media says and the Joy Reads and the Joy Bayars and all these nonsense idiots that have TV shows say. Or AOC and all these other idiots, these wannabe intellectuals. It's not racist. But see, the left's agenda and narrative is everything and everyone is racist who has a different opinion than the woke morons of the country, the woke morons of the left. Mainstream media personalities, white and black, they made sure to make Tim Scott's rebuttal all about race. They said Tim Scott's the token black in the GOP, and he's out of touch. That's saying America is not a racist country. That's what white people said. That's what black people said. Both. There was a hashtag Uncle Tim, you know, like Uncle Tom, Uncle Tim, that trended on Twitter for 2 full days before Twitter decided, you know, to remove it. Because, you know, thanks Twitter for being so vigilant and removing it. Let it run for 2 days, letting all that nonsense happen. But, you know, Twitter was very vigilant after the second full day. We'll take that down. Nonsense. You know, the left seems to find it appropriate to fight so-called racism with more racism. That's what they do. That's what they're doing. And it's not going to stop. That is exactly what they do. And the sad thing is, it's mostly white liberals pushing the reverse racism, and that everything wrong in the country is rooted from white supremacy and affects communities of color more. You know, like climate change, like the vice president says, because climate change apparently is racist. The change of climate is racist. Give me a break already. Give me a break. Well, what I find interesting is that both President Biden and Vice President Harris, they both said that America is not racist, but has a history of racism and it can't be overlooked. Okay. They said this after the days following Tim Scott and his rebuttal. And I agree. It's hard to say that I agree with the president and the vice president saying that, but they hit it. They contradicted themselves, but they said, that America is not racist, but has a history of racism and it can't be overlooked. Yes, the country is not racist. The country is not racist. Yes. And no one is overlooking our nation's history, any of it. Every country in the world has some sort of history of racism or slavery or anything else, and it's all horrific. But it's not, it doesn't play an everyday role in Americans' lives, and it shouldn't. There's no reason for it. America is not systemically racist. America is not a racist country. But if our nation's leaders are publicly saying that the country is not racist, then why are they pushing for things with all of this, like, that are with this reverse racism, like, you know, the curriculum, the new curriculum, the not new, but the critical race theory to be taught to our kids? Because there's a big push for that for Biden and his education department. There's a big push for this critical race theory, which I'll get more into at a later time. Probably going to have a couple different guests on talking about critical race theory. But this curriculum was made up by the New York Times, by a bunch of poets and essay writers of ideas, also known as a 1619 Project. And all it does is basically it teaches kids that America is bad. It indoctrinates children in schools. It's already in colleges. America is bad and that you should be judging people by their skin color, which is wrong. I was brought up to ignore people's skin color, and you judge someone after you get to know them, no matter what color skin they have. And that's exactly the American history we don't want to repeat, is judging someone by their skin color or hating America. But Biden and Harris say America is not racist, but then they say, and they want to spend millions and millions of dollars on this, that domestic terrorism rooted with white supremacy is our country's biggest threat. And I say, what in the actual fuck are they thinking? The biggest threat is domestic terrorism rooted with white supremacy? Listen, we know that there is white supremacy. We know you go down into the Deep South and other places, and you still have the guys in the white robes, the KKK, which, by the way, remember, was started by the Democrats, are in their fields burning crosses. And it's horrible, horrible, horrible. Those people are horrible. Whatever name you want to call them, I support. They're horrible. But they are not a domestic threat in this country. They're not burning down cities, people. We know that. We know who is burning down cities. Well, that's the movement, Black Lives Matter, which that movement was completely exploited by the Democrats, and they're burning down cities. That's a domestic terrorist group. When they're burning down federal courthouses and destroying properties and killing people and hurting people and looting businesses and burning down businesses and costing the insurance industry $2 billion plus, which is now going to affect other people with their insurance premiums and coverages and things like that. White supremacy is – domestic terrorism rooted in white supremacy is not an issue in this country. And if it was, I don't think Black – and I've said this in the past. I don't think Black Lives Matter would have an opportunity to burn down cities if domestic terrorism with white supremacy was such a problem. I'm imagining there would be wars in the street between white supremacists and Black Lives Matter supporters or black – I'm sorry, not supporters, Black Lives Matter rioters. Because to me, there's a big difference of supporting the Black Lives Matter movement and then being a rioter exploiting the Black Lives Matter name. And that's why it's important to pay attention and get involved with what's being said and what's being taught to kids, like critical race theory. It's out there. It's coming into schools. Biden's education department is pushing it. It's in colleges already. Some public schools are slowly introducing it. You have to pay attention to your kids' schoolwork, people, what they're bringing home, what they're doing in school. Take a stand against your kids being taught to hate America and themselves for something that they know nothing about and had nothing to do with because of the color of their skin. American history is American history, okay? American history cannot be changed. Slavery needs to be talked about and taught to kids, which it is. But I mean, should we start teaching American children of German heritage, whose ancestors are from Germany, that Germany is bad and evil and you should hate all Germans and your history, your German heritage and existence because Nazis killed 6 million Jews? No one's doing that. That's part of history. Slavery is a part of history. Slavery is a part of American history, and it was horrific and tragic. And thank God for the Republican Party that fought against and ended it. That the Northern Democrats that broke away from the Southern Democrats and fought to end the spread of slavery and then the Civil War. And, well, I'm not going to give you a history lesson, but the facts are there. Children should learn about the facts of slavery. Just like the Holocaust, without a doubt. Not theory and projection of hatred through reverse racism. Screw that. It's nonsense. It's bullshit. It shouldn't even be called critical race theory. It should be called critical hate fact because that's what it is. The fact that they want to teach hate. That is exactly what it is, except they put a catchy, sophisticated sounding name. And it's disgusting, and it's important to protect our kids from it. So I want to talk about this disconnect that Republican leaders have from the Republican Party as a whole. You know, the leaders of the Republican Party, Kevin McCarthy and Liz Useless Rhino Cheney in the House and old man Mitch McConnell in the Senate, they aren't leading the Republican Party the way I feel most Republican voters and most other Republican lawmakers want. There's no drive, no fire in the belly. The Republican leaders are just stale. No one's standing up to the radical progressive Democrats. And on the other hand, then, yeah, you have these firebrand House Republicans like Matt Gaetz out of Florida, Marjorie Taylor Greene out of Georgia, Lauren Boebert out of Colorado, the Second Amendment, big Second Amendment supporter, gun-toting congresswoman, and Jim Jordan from Ohio. And you also have some aggressive Republicans in the Senate like Ted Cruz from Texas, Rand Paul from Kentucky, Josh Hawley from Missouri, and John Kennedy from Louisiana too. He's a fairly newer congressman, I believe. And I like his style. I like the way he stands up and he speaks his mind. They're all very outspoken, strong Republicans, and they engage with Americans on a regular basis and support conservative values. And I feel like the Republican leadership doesn't listen to them or promote their views, which are very popular among voters, like maybe yourself and me. Because you never really see Kevin McCarthy engaging to the public other than, I guess, in his home district, but not to the Americans in general. And you're the congressional leader of the Republican Party, the minority leader in the House. So you should engage more so Americans see what our leadership is about in Congress, because the Republican members of Congress, they whether they report to him or look up to him, whatever the case is. And you would think that leaders of the party would be more engaging with Americans in general, like say Matt Gaetz or Ted Cruz, who are very engaging. They're always on TV, or they're always speaking to somebody, and they're always very engaged. And we all know Liz Cheney, she's useless. She looks like she's going to get primaried out. Looks like she's going to get removed from her leadership position. Even Kevin McCarthy is not happy with her. She hates Donald Trump. We know that and is very vocal about it. And again, we know that Donald Trump is the most powerful and influential figure in the Republican Party. We know that. The MAGA movement, that's a very large percentage of Republican voters that want to see from their Congress members is that the pushing of that MAGA movement and conservative values. And again, Liz Cheney hates Donald Trump and outspoken about it. Donald Trump hates Liz Cheney. And she's most likely done politically, hopefully, and gets primaried out. You know, it's bad when the Speaker of the House, who's the Democrat, says that Liz Cheney is courageous and has integrity and all this other nonsense. And you know, it's time to change the Republican leadership when she's being praised by the Democratic Party leadership. That's a problem. And Mitch McConnell, we know he's a big bag of stale wind who just, he doesn't do anything. He's not aggressive. And we know that he wants Donald Trump completely exiled from the Republican Party. We know he didn't vote to impeach him, and we know his whole big rhetoric speech about after the fact that day, how he ripped apart Donald Trump and said he was direct cause of January 6th and all that other nonsense. But what's interesting is that if Donald Trump ran and won in 2024, Mitch McConnell would be a little puppy dog to him and bow to him, because Mitch McConnell will still be in office. I think he runs again in 2026. I had a little bit of hope for Kevin McCarthy after he went to see Donald Trump down in Florida after Trump lost the election. But I think that was optics so that Kevin McCarthy could stay in good graces of MAGA Republicans. People saw, all right, he supports Donald Trump, because I don't truly believe Kevin McCarthy. I think Kevin McCarthy has his own agenda. There's more coming out about Kevin McCarthy and who he talks to, and we're talking about corporation lobbyists. There's a guy, Frank Luntz, who's a big lobbyist of corporations. There's even, I believe, Kevin McCarthy's renting an apartment from him in D.C. Is it a conflict of interest? This guy Frank Luntz is a liberal, and the GOP talks to this guy and takes his advice and listens to him, and it's insanity. It's completely insanity. So Kevin, I think the whole leadership just needs to go. Kevin McCarthy is not a leader, in my opinion. To me, leaders fight along the sides of their best fighters. They stand up for their party and the party's beliefs. And it pains me to say this, really pains me to say this, but as ridiculous, as radical and moronic the Democratic Party is, and progresses to be, they're not slowing down. They're progressing to be as radical as ever. They listen to their aggressive and progressive members, like AOC and her squad, the socialist squad, Ilhan Omar, Mr. Clean, Ayanna Pressley, the black woman with that bald head of hers, which is so creepy looking. The other radical terrorist sympathizer, Rashida Tlaib, and then you have the China the China spy lover, Eric Swalwell, who took part in the hearings for Donald Trump's impeachment and was stuck up for by Democrats after he was banging a Chinese spy, Fang Fang. they dictate the agenda, and their leaders, Fancy Nancy over there, Pelosi, the crypt keeper of the Capitol, she falls right in line with them and defends them to a point. But they listen to their crazies in the party. The Republicans don't listen to their aggressive members of their party. The Democrats do. The Democrats not only listen to their moronic minions, but push their aggressive, progressive agenda and defend their members no matter what. Republicans, on the other hand, are very quick to shun each other when the breeze is foul and you know, oh, this person's not looking so hot, I'm going to take a step back. But not Democrats. Democrats will eat each other's young today and co-sponsor bills together tomorrow. That's how they are. They're disgusting individuals. That's politics. The point is, again, the Republican Party needs a major overhaul. It needs new aggressive leadership that care about preserving the values of America and conservatism, without a doubt. Ted Cruz just made an announcement that he'll no longer accept any corporate campaign donations. And I love that. And I think every single Republican should follow suit. And I want to see where the loyalties truly lie. I believe Matt Gaetz said he's going to do the same thing. Other Republicans are coming out. Every Republican who's worth anything needs to turn their back on big corporations and not take a dime. They need to do grassroots fundraising. It can happen. It will happen. There are people out there. Marjorie Taylor Greene in Congress, she broke the record in the first quarter, I think, of raising over $3 million or something like that. Or I forget the exact amount of money. Everybody was amazed. None of it big corporate money, apparently. Just private donations. Or maybe it was $100 million. I don't remember. But Republicans should be turning their backs on big corporations. And that's another reason why you need to get involved as an American voter, to vote, to speak your mind, to volunteer, make a donation to a candidate you support, run for local office. Republicans should be eyeing local political offices like school board, a local office like school board, to keep critical race theory out of schools, because the left is attempting to infiltrate all the schools and put candidates up in local elections that support critical race theory. And a lot of Republicans aren't paying attention to the local school boards. If you have an elected dog catcher in your community, make sure you run a Republican. So this way maybe they'll do away with kill shelters and they won't kill dogs. You know how Democrats kill babies with abortion and Planned Parenthood. It all starts local. Run for school board. Keep critical race theory out of your school district. If you can't run for something, get involved with a candidate and go knock on doors, make phone calls, hand out brochures, and help them get elected. If they have the same values as you, you have to get involved. Run for town council. Run for mayor. Get engaged. Fight like hell to preserve your community's values and protect them from these sick, progressive, anti-American, and anti-police woke shitheads, because that's what they are. And if you're just going to sit back and let it happen and not speak up, not step up and not do anything, then you're just as bad as these sick, woke radicals. And that's a fact. I'm going to leave it at that. I appreciate you being here. Appreciate you listening. I'll be back soon. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And God bless America. You take care. You can reach out to me with opinions and ideas for other episodes at TheGreatDivide1776@gmail.com. You can also find me on social media at The Great Divide Podcast. And please be sure to leave a review for this podcast so the show can be shared to other listeners. Thank you, and God bless America.